Welcome to Zoni Living. Today we're talking about how to stay hopeful and inspired. There's no question we're living in challenging times and feeling the impact of a global pandemic, war in Ukraine, widespread inflation, supply chain issues, labor shortages, environmental concerns, and political issues that are dividing our nation. And that's a lot. And that's why we're bringing in Rabbi Daniel Cohen. His book is called What Will They Say About You When You Are Gone? Creating a Life of Legacy. Rabbi Cohen is joining us now from Israel to help us remember who we are and how to live our purpose, our best life, even in challenging times.
Thank you very much for welcoming me this evening, at least in Israel.
Welcome, Rabbi Cohen. It's great to see you. I'm so glad that you stayed up late. What time is it there?
It's almost midnight, actually. I'm right outside of Jerusalem. Very holy place.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you on your book, What They Say About You When You're Gone, Creating a Life of Legacy. Really makes you think and offers practical steps and tools to help us be mindful and think about how we're acting. Well, I found a powerful message. I found many powerful messages, but this one says, no encounter is random. If I meet someone or pass by someone and our faces meet, a possibility emerges for a soul connection. I love that. And a moment of eternal impact. You talk about realizing the holiness of the moment. Will you please talk about that?
Sure. I think in light of the introduction that you shared this morning, which actually really creates a sense, I think, of anxiety, of paralysis. We feel the world is such a crazy place and challenging place. You know, one of the choices that we have is to just lament the situation in which we're in. However, Jewish mysticism teaches us that our role is not to lament the darkness, but to increase the light. And every encounter that we have is an opportunity to create something eternal. I truly believe that if I meet somebody, even if it's a stranger, my focus is to understand that I may not be able to change the world, but I can change the world of one person. And that little bit of light that I create, that act of kindness, that smile, will have an impact that will then transform potentially that person's life. And slowly, one by one, the universe begins to change from that. So to me, that's a very empowering message. We are bombarded by so much negativity and so much noise, but really the philosophy of the book is we have free choice. And in every encounter that we have, we can just let it go. We can try to bring a little heaven down to earth in that moment.
Oh, I love that. And I guess you can never underestimate the power of kindness. You write about the importance of knowing who we are, understanding our gifts and our purpose and why we do what we do, not necessarily what we do, but the importance of why we do it and why knowing our values makes making decisions so much easier. This part was new for me. You talk about fortifying and really leaning into our values through developing habits that underscore and strengthen them. And you call this the momentum factor. Tell us about these holy habits.
Yeah, so I say one of the challenges that we all have is, you know, we're always encountering decisions where do we do something based upon principle or based upon pressure? Do we do something based upon convenience or conviction? And the truth is that life is not made up of major moral decisions, but it's made up of small moments when I choose to be either a giver or a taker. Do I choose to be honest or maybe to cut a corner? And the philosophy behind that is that we'll never have the strength to make the choices that are the right choices in the bigger moments, unless we recognize that we need to get in the habit of making good choices that reflect our values and our principles all the time. And here's where I talk about holy habits, because when we are in what I call the groove of making these choices, where the first question when I go into a room is not what can that person do for me, but what can I do for that person? Or I know that my word always needs to be something that people can count on, then even in the smallest of ways, I am attuned to really making sure that I'm making choices based upon my value system. If somebody doesn't have a value system, then every moral choice becomes up to negotiation. Is it worth it for me to be honest? Should I do the right thing, even if it's going to cost me something? But if somebody is clear about what their values are, then all we need to do is look through the prism of those values to say whether or not it's the right decision or not. You know, I'll tell you a story that to me is a great illustration of it. It was during the Beijing Olympics one summer, and the New York Times had a front page story about something called a dolphin kick, which is actually illegal for swimmers.
A dolphin kick.
A dolphin kick.
Okay.
And they asked the swimmers, if you know that you're not going to be caught, will you still do it? So many of the swimmers said, well, if nobody's watching and I can get ahead that way, I'm going to do it. There was one swimmer, he was a bronze medalist for the United States. His name was Brandon Hansen. He said, I wasn't brought up that way.
Wow.
I wasn't brought up to cheat. And for him, it wasn't an issue of negotiation. That's not who he is. And the more that we can be attuned to those values, and to really crystallize them, which I try to help people do in the book, then we'll be able to make what I call courageous choices, develop holy habits, and know that we'll be able to make decisions not based upon any pressure, but doing what is right.
You know, you also talk in the book, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you talk about giving, and you talk about giving rather than $20 to a cause, giving a dollar a day for 20 days. And I know I'm not quoting that exactly right, but that's all along the same principle of getting in a habit of doing something that aligns with your values. So it makes it easier.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because again, at the end of the day, and this is an important principle too, more than the gift benefits the receiver, it benefits the giver. If I get into the habit of being a giving person, and when I see somebody, again, I'm giving them the dollar, I'm giving them a smile, which actually lasts longer than the dollar, I just get into the habit. So it's not about a one-time experience, but again, taking that $20 and saying every day, I'm getting into the habit of being a giver, it just makes me into a giver. There was a person who was a mentor of mine, Rebbetzin Esther Youngreis, who said, if you don't feel like giving, put your hand in your pocket and just give.
Wow.
Because then God will give you a reason to give. So just do it. We don't believe we should wait to feel inspired. That our actions are affected, that our emotions are affected by our actions. Sometimes people think that I have to wait to feel to do the right thing, but actually it works the other way around. Just do it, as Nike would say. And then we'll open up our souls so that we feel more inspired to do the right thing on a more consistent basis.
Well, you know, so many people of excellence talk about what meditation does for them. And you also talk about meditation. I'd like you to share that with us. I thought it was really interesting when you pointed out that you don't have to be sitting still if that doesn't work for you. If to meditate, you might be somebody who likes to fly fish or go hiking, and that helps you just as much.
Yes, I'll share again another story that I think illustrates that. There was a fellow who was working on a farm, a young man, and the farmer got very upset because he couldn't find the watch that he was missing. So everybody was running around the barn trying to find this watch. Nobody could find it. Finally, he goes back and he has his lunch with his family. And lo and behold, about 15 minutes later, a young boy comes back and says, I found the watch. And the fellow says, we had 10 people running around this barn. And nobody could find the watch. He said, well, all I did was I put my head to the ground and I listened to the watch that was ticking.
Perfect.
Sometimes there's so much noise that we don't have an opportunity to listen to our inner voice. And whether that's walking, sitting in the park, saying a prayer, fly fishing, whatever it is, the important thing is to turn off the outside noise to listen to our inner voices. I'm a strong believer that leading a life of legacy is not about imposing something from outside of us, but about unlocking what is inside of us that sometimes we fail to listen to. And that's where meditation is so important on a consistent basis, because it gives us the space and time and bandwidth to tap into the highest aspirations we have for ourselves. One other point related to this, which really is the premise of the book. I mean, if somebody, God forbid, his life is on the line, or again, they're at a funeral, or they're very sick, we all tap into that voice. But life is not meant to be a highlight film, to only tap into the voice in a moment of crisis. Regular meditation enables us in the good times and in the ebb and flow of daily life to really listen to that voice on a consistent basis.
Beautifully said. Well, you talk a lot about reverse engineering your life. So, Rabbi Cohen, if you could tell us what that means and give us a tidbit about how we might do that.
So reverse engineering your life. This is actually a term that was shared by a friend of mine who's in business. He said, when you want to reverse engineer something, you actually look at your end product and then you deconstruct it. Let's say, for example, in the military, a missile comes across and you don't know how to make the missile. So you take the missile apart and then you know how going forward you can rebuild that missile. So when I talk about reverse engineering your life, whether it's at a funeral where we hear a eulogy or when we thank God are blessed with life, the first step is identify the best version of yourself. Develop your prototype. So I'll ask people to do an exercise, which is if we had 5 words that we want to be remembered by, what would they be? If we had 24 hours to live, what would we do and why? Identify what is that life you want to lead. Keep that front and center. And then what I mean by reverse engineer is I'll share with people principles to stay true to those values on a regular basis. So for example, one of the principles in the book is again called living inspired. Living inspired means that we recognize that every day is a gift and that the real value of life is not just in days passing, but in moments and memories that we create. And in many ways, that's the way we reverse engineer our life. Too often life goes by and we wonder, wait a second, where did the past year go? What did I do the past 5 years? Wow. But if we can be fully present in each moment that we experience, create a memory of a lifetime, reach out and do an act of kindness, those are ways that we cannot stop time, but we can slow down time to make the most of the gift of every day.
That's beautiful. I want you to know, Rabbi Cohen, that when you said that, everybody in the studio wrote down 5 words that we all want to be remembered for.
So
this is our homework. We'll have to be working on that. But you also say the longest distance, and you were talking about inspiration, the longest distance in life is between our heads and our hearts. Here's a quote from the book. We all experience flashes of inspiration when we awake from our spiritual slumber. In those moments, we embrace the seriousness of purpose and pledge to truly devote ourselves to our deepest values. Yet, all too often, our motivation is short-lived. Well, how do we hang on to those moments? How do we hang on to that deep yearning to be our best?
Great question. It is true that, you know, there's so many times when we think about what I could do, what I should do, and we have moments of inspiration. So I think that one of the ways we hold on to it, it does relate to leading a organized and disciplined life and just being very intentional. When I wake up in the morning, the first thing I say is, number one, I believe in God, but that God believes in me. Mm. And that means there's something for me to accomplish today that nobody else in the universe could accomplish to make this world a little bit of a better place. So I'll write down, and I suggest, write down 2 or 3 people that you could reach out to today to lift their lives up, to make their lives a little bit better. Find a way to spend 15 minutes trying to think about what your goals are for the day. Write down what you're grateful for. I mean, that to me is a very important way to develop a sense of gratitude. One of the stories that I share in the book is a story of my daughter who was on a radio show. I had to hang up when I called her, and she was on a radio show where the host talked about the happiness hour. And he asked her, what are the things you do to stay motivated every day? And she said, well, I write down things that I'm grateful for. And he asked her, how many are you up to? Mm. And at the time, she was up to close to 800 of them.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I try not to repeat myself. Uh-huh. That's a key. Because it's not just enough to say at the end of Saturday, well, I thank God I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive. Every day is a new day to look at things. And she said, every day before I go to sleep, I read 50 of them. So how can I not be grateful? Mm-hmm. So it's creating these habits of gratitude, habits of anticipatory kindness is what I call it. Elijah moments, finding a way to touch the life of a person, that when you get into that mode, automatically you're leading a life that is more meaningful, and you're finding that you're not just waiting for a moment of awakening to say, thank you, God, I'm alive, but rather it just becomes, again, part of who you are. And that's really the key, to lead a life of purpose, to lead a life of meaning.
You know, you do mention Elijah moments in your book, and you just mentioned it here, and I was hoping that you could give us a little lesson, a little reminder about who Elijah was.
Sure. So Elijah was a prophet that existed over probably 2,500 years ago, and he's known not only in the Bible, but also in Jewish thought as somebody who comes into a person's life to help lift them up when they need it most. Mm. So I talk about the Elijah moment with the following story about a fellow who was speaking to his mystic teacher and said, I want to see Elijah the prophet. So the teacher said to him, take some food, go into the forest, and there's a widow there with her children. Bring food for the weekend, for the Sabbath, and I promise you, you'll see Elijah the prophet. So he goes there Friday night, Saturday. Come Sunday, he still hasn't seen Elijah. So he goes back to the mystic and said, you promised me I would see Elijah. And the mystic says, take the food again and go back into the forest. And I promise you, this week, you'll see Elijah. He comes within earshot of the home, and he hears a young child crying out to the mother. And the mother turns to the child, and the child turns to the mother and says, where are we going to get food from for this Sabbath? And the mother turns to the child and says, just like Elijah came last week, Elijah is going to come again.
Aha.
And then he realized that he was the Elijah.
Absolutely.
That this woman was waiting for. And discovering your Elijah moment means that we may not change the world, but we can change the world of one person every day. And that could be, you know, simply a cashier at a supermarket or a coffee where we reach out to them. I'll tell you a story, and I believe very strongly also that when we put that light into the world, in a world sometimes that is dark, that is chaotic, God then takes that light and can turn it into a burning flame. Many years ago, it was 9/11, I was listening to CBS 880 radio, and there was a New York City police officer who was talking on the radio how happy he was somebody gave him a $20 bill thanking him for being a police officer. So rather than let that inspiration go in one ear and out the other, I had already bought my coffee. I went into the coffee shop and I said, I want to pay it forward for the next person. So I sit back and lo and behold, it's a young guy with the baby. And the cashier says, this fellow over there paid for your coffee. And he walks over to me and he says, how come you paid for my coffee? He said, well, today's 9/11. I just want to share a little goodwill. He says, you won't believe it. I'm a New York City police officer, and I was at ground zero on 9/11.
Boy.
So here I am in Stamford, Connecticut, doing one small deed, but it's orchestrated in a way that it touches somebody who truly understands the meaning of that day, and my light continues to burn bright within him. And we have these opportunities literally all the time. We may not see somebody ever again, but in that one fleeting moment, we have a chance potentially to make a difference in their life.
Yeah, that story just gives me shivers and also reminds us that we are all connected, all of us, and it's amazing. You also point out that we are all role models. You say the world is watching, and I think that becomes really apparent, especially when we are parents, and I know you are. You have you and your wife, Diane, have six beautiful daughters.
So, thank God.
they're fabulous. So talk about what you mean. You know, how careful, how paranoid should we be about the world watching us? And what does that mean?
Well, I'm not looking to scare anybody. That's kind of not exactly what the deal is. So I think about it in two contexts. First, you know, I think about it in the context of making courageous choices. You know, how many times would people actually do the right thing if they knew that somebody was watching? They think, for example, you know, in the back office of some financial firm, nobody's going to catch them. But at the end of the day, the decisions that a person makes reverberates into the future and reflects on their family. King Solomon said, better a good name than all the wealth in the world. And one of the key things to maintaining your reputation and a good name is understanding that, yes, the world is watching. My children are watching, my family's watching, my community's watching, not to scare somebody, but to make somebody realize the significance of the decisions that we make. There's an idea also in mysticism that says that we should always see the world as being half meritorious and half going in a negative way. And every act that we do, every human being has the potential to tilt the world either towards blessing or to the other way.
Wow.
So I think about that, which in many ways is a very inspiring concept.
Sure.
It's also a reminder for us that values are not taught, but values are caught. You know, I'm reminded again of another story of a rabbi who's a friend of mine who would tell his children that they always had to be honest and tell the truth. So once they were home, and there was a fellow who called for the rabbi, and the rabbi said he didn't want to talk to the person. So he said to his kids, tell the person I'm not home. And then immediately he caught himself. He said, I'm telling my family.
To lie.
To lie.
I think we've all done that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we have to live these values. And, you know, my inspiration, you know, to do what I do is very much not based upon what my parents told me, but about the positive experiences that I had with them. And, you know, our kids are watching, our community's watching. And again, not to scare people, but to say we have the power to create a positive experience. If we're enthusiastic about faith, about kindness, about volunteerism, there's a much greater likelihood that they'll also be on that path as well. But if we complain and are negative and say, why is he asking me for money? Then that will filter down, unfortunately, to our families and our community as well. So I see it in a positive way. The world is watching. It's really a vote that our actions count. And we have wonderful opportunity for influence and impact.
That's a great visual that you leave us with, that good things can tilt the world one way or the other.
Thank you. It's Maimonides. Thanks.
I love that. You know, you give us a lot of celebrity examples in your book. And you talk about one of my favorites, actor, director Ron Howard. And and he recalls leaving funerals when he was a child and not being terribly inspired. And I remember him saying something like, yeah, if all they could say about he was a nice guy about someone, is that really a great life? And that's bothered him.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great conversation. It was just very fortunate that I had the opportunity to meet with him. As I walked into his office, I kept on thinking of, Happy Days. I was a big fan
for
of
sure.
that show.
Yeah.
His voice sounds the same. But he's like a very positive person, a very giving person. He talks a lot about the influence of his mother in particular, who is very upbeat, like this Christmas is the best Christmas. And he's deeply influenced by them. And I think he tries to lead a life, which is, again, not just based upon convenience, but based upon creating some impact for his family. So really what he talked about, too, is, again, the starting point of this book is that nobody wants to be remembered just for being a nice guy alone. I mean, that's important to be a nice guy, but we have a lot of potential inside of us. And again, that visual of the funeral is certainly not meant to be depressing, but actually the way I see it is if somebody's reading this book or we're talking about it, we have a life to live. We have, God willing, years ahead of us. And even if we don't know what the future will bring, all we can control is today. And it says in the book of Psalms, rejoice in today. Make today meaningful, make today impactful. Be grateful for the blessing of today. And then if we lead our lives with that attitude, we'll find that our lives are a lot more enriched and a lot more fulfilling.
Tell us what motivated you to write this book.
I would say it was a couple of things. First of all, as a rabbi, not necessarily in this order, but I oftentimes encounter people who reach out in moments of crisis. Someone's going to the hospital, somebody's sick, somebody passes away, and they really want to get serious about their life. But I see many times that moment of awakening dissipates. Mm-hmm. So I really have spent time thinking about how do I enable people to stay true to that inspiration on a consistent basis. It also stems probably primarily from my own life experience. First of all, my parents always inspired me to know that, if not now, when, make the most of every day. Very upbeat, always grateful, even though I'm the oldest of six and our house was crazy. Mm-hmm. My parents would always say, thank God things are good. And then my mom tragically died from a brain aneurysm when she was 44. So in that moment, I really learned the hard way that life changes in an instant. And we are not entitled to anything. You know, someone who's listening to this, it's just a moment to pause that in an instant, life can change. So be forgiving, be kind, focus on what's really important. And I live with that. And then when I got to the age of 44, I always knew my mom was young, but then I began to ask myself the question, am I doing the most with the life that God has given me to maximize my divine potential and to share that light with others as well? And that really was the main impetus for starting on this journey of helping me develop, but also helping others develop as well.
You know, I think a lot of us are touched by that moment of loss that you talk about, and you were just a college student at the time.
Yes, I was at Yeshiva University, and it's very tragic. I remember it obviously like it was yesterday, unfortunately. I was down in Florida visiting my mom's parents without a care in the world at the pool in their condominium, and then we got the worst phone call of my life, that my mom had an aneurysm. The second one, she went to a coma, and then she passed away within 48 hours. So,
lives
were turned upside down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all recall times when we have had tremendous loss. And I think in those moments, and you talk about this, you know, seizing that moment and trying not to lose that momentum to do something better, be the best you can be. You know, this is what I've done to your book. I've tattered it and put post notes in it.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to share it, but this is what I've done to it. But I was hoping
that means you're really working through the book. That's good.
I've enjoyed it, and I was hoping that for those who are watching, listening today, can you leave us with five ways to tap into the best version of ourselves? And you can give us six if you want.
Okay, you're a nice woman, I could tell. I'll give you six just because
generous.
You're being so nice.
That's right.
So I would say number one, take even 30 minutes, you know, once a week to try to answer these questions about how do you want to be remembered, the 24 hours to live, thinking about what's worth fighting for in your life. So creating a set time every week to reflect on the best version of yourself. A second thing is make it a habit every day to write down one thing that you're grateful for, start a gratitude journal, and do not repeat yourself, and just keep it going. The third thing is once in the morning and once at night, reach out to somebody, whether it's a phone call or a text, let them know how much they mean to you. I'll give you an example. I mean, one of the answers that somebody said to me with 24 hours to live is, they would thank people in their lives that made a difference in their lives. And then everybody turned to them and said, what are you waiting for?
Yes.
And then he emailed me the next day and said he made a commitment that every day he would identify somebody in his life that helped him along the way, and he would thank them. It's changed his life.
Wow.
So make it a habit of doing that. Number four, create an Elijah moment. We have a Facebook page called the Elijah Moment Facebook page. Make it a habit every day when you go into a supermarket, just to smile and ask somebody how they're doing. Pay it forward. These are small acts of kindness that really make a difference in somebody's life. If you're in the parking lot and you see somebody who's older, who's struggling, how can I help you? Mm. And then you just get into the habit of doing that. And the final thing is pray. I believe that none of us can get anything done with only our own efforts, but there is a higher power, there's a God who believes in us. And I pray three times a day, if not more, for God to give me the strength to renew me with fulfilling his mission. I don't believe that I'm here for my own glory. I'm here as God's ambassador to hopefully maximize my divine potential and to share God's light with the world. But God's our co-pilot. We're not doing this on our own. So take some time to be grateful, to pray to God for help, pray for your family, for community, because we all need that sort of divine lift to help us become the best version of ourselves.
Again, thank you. Absolutely beautiful. Rabbi Daniel Cohen, thank you for the gift of your time and the inspiration today. And we really appreciate you staying up late to talk to us on Zoni Living.
I appreciate it. God bless your whole team. And if people can look on my website, Rabbi Daniel Cohen, and love to stay in touch. But thank you so much. God bless you.
And God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rabbi Daniel Cohen's book, What Will They Say About You When You're Gone? Creating a Life of Legacy. He also has a radio show, The Rabbi and the Reverend, with Reverend Greg Dahl on the Gab Radio Network. And you can also read more at flagstaffbusinessnews.com. As we've just heard, kindness is huge and much needed in the world. We can create a life of legacy by knowing who we are, making courageous decisions, and sharing our gifts. I hope you've been inspired by today's Zoni Living. Thank you for joining me. I'm Bonnie Stevens.